Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Smyrna,
104.5 FM.
Franklin,
104.5 FM.
Murfreesboro,
104.5 FM.
No matter where you listen in Middle Tennessee, you'll always find us on one frequency.
104.5 The Zone.
It is the Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Greg Cosell joins us, presented by the Huffaker Group of Keller Williams Realty. Make the right move by choosing Huffaker. Visit them online, THGTN.com, or call 833-THG-NASH. We have the very best on to discuss and break down games from across the NFL and preview the upcoming week. We always start with the Tennessee Titans. Based on the local matchups, we'll break down the Ravens and then look ahead to the Chargers with Greg Cosell of NFL Films. Greg, how are you?
Jonathan, what's happening?
Not a lot. Getting ready to go across the pond.
Are you going across the pond?
We are. All three of us are headed that way tomorrow.
Good for you.
You can join us if you'd like.
No, I actually can't. You know, I'm just going to cross the pond that's in my community when I go home.
A lot of discussion here, as you might imagine, about that performance last Sunday in Week 6 against Baltimore. The Ravens, Greg, owned the trenches on both sides of the ball. Why couldn't the Titans get anything going with their fronts?
Well, I think you have to start really with the offense. They played a very difficult team in terms of multiple front looks and multiple pressure concepts with blitz, and they had a very, very difficult time figuring out where people were coming from. And then on top of that, they were just individual one-on-one matchups that they lost. I mean, the sack on 3rd and 12, which ended their first possession, the Titans had a 7-man pass protection concept. Now, that takes care of everything in terms of pressure schemes. But Smith beat the right guard Klein one-on-one. So when those things happen, you're also in a lot of trouble. But they really struggled identifying, recognizing, and executing against a lot of different front looks.
Is it fair to say that the breakdowns first happened on the interior of the offensive line for the Titans, and then that allowed the edge rush to get to Mariota as he moved off the spot a bit and got and expected the rush, I should say?
Well, I'll answer that this way. It's very difficult to sort of put that together the way you said, because here's what you have right now. And obviously this game, it all kind of came to a head in terms of the issues with pass protection. But you also have Mariota, who's still showing a tendency to break down and leave the pocket prematurely. There are times he ran into sacks. He's not overly patient in the pocket at this point. He's not a refined progression reader at this point. He's not a comfortable player right now. Then you have a bad mix in their passing game, particularly versus man coverage. You have receivers who are not creating the desired separation, and a quarterback in Mariota who's not an aggressive turn-it-loose thrower. So Mariota is much more of a see-it, throw-it kind of quarterback. He needs to feel comfortable that his receiver is open. Every once in a while, against zone, he will make an outstanding anticipation throw, as he did to Davis for 24 yards, which was obviously his best throw of the game. It was a really nice route concept, and Mariota threw it with great timing. But when it's man coverage, Jonathan, and receivers, you know, they don't necessarily win by wide margins in the NFL. So he's not a turn-it-loose guy. I don't think he's comfortable with that. He's certainly not right now. Whether he gets there, that remains to be seen.
The route depths, I'm wondering about. It didn't seem that they adjusted much. You know, I know throwing short of the sticks isn't what you always want, but there seemed to be room short of the sticks on 3rd and 18, there was 12 to be gotten at least, and there weren't receivers on the screen a lot of times when I was rewatching.
Well, you mean because they ran too deep, you're saying?
Yeah, and routes that took too long to develop, and he didn't have time for them.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, a third and 18, there's not a lot of play calls anyway, PK, as you know. But you know, in general, you're dealing with a pass game that, well, let's put it this way. As you know, the depth of the quarterback's drop has to time up with the depth of the receiver's routes. That's how the pass game is structured, and that's how it works. Right now, that's not functioning at a high level for many of the reasons we just discussed. Mariota is not comfortable. He's certainly not comfortable if it's on deeper drops. And with the issues they had this particular week, you know, as the game progressed, he certainly wasn't comfortable.
So were you surprised there wasn't more quick game? We kept waiting for the adjustment, particularly after halftime. We expected an adjustment. It looked to me like the adjustment was they were waiting for their guys to block it up better, and that never happened. But I didn't see them trying different stuff to be quicker.
I mean, could you do more of that? Theoretically, yes, but that kind of stuff then has to go with a run game as well. And see, that's another issue. It's easy to talk about Mariota, and again, we'll wait and see because new offense. We'll wait and see. It's obviously not going well now. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. He's not playing well, and overall the offense is not playing well. But the issue too, as well, is they're not running the ball with any kind of consistency at all. So what you have is you have too many long yard situations. There's no sense of rhythm to the offense whatsoever, and it becomes very difficult for this offense. Because let's put it this way. You're dealing with an offense at the quarterback and wide receiver position that is not going to carry a team, not at this point in time. So they need to be, to use the cliched phrase, but it's true, kept on schedule. They need to be in makeable down and distance situations, and they're not. There's no run game to speak of here at all.
Let's get into that run game a bit. When you think of the San Diego Chargers and the defensive front they have, this will be the smallest front that the Titans will have faced to this point in the season. I don't know if it'll be the smallest overall throughout their entire schedule. It could be. But in looking at that matchup just from, you know, looking at it from a broad view, Greg.
Right.
Would you assume that the Titans feel like that is the area they have to get going, is the run game against the Chargers front?
Well, I would think that they would line up with multiple tight ends in this game and try to do that, Jonathan, because I think that if they line up with three wide receivers or if they get stuck in too many long yardage situations, they're going to run into a similar situation as they did against the Ravens, because Gus Bradley is not the Gus Bradley that people think of when he was back with the Seattle Seahawks back in the day. He is now incredibly multiple with his fronts. They play a lot of nickel, five defensive backs, dime, six defensive backs. Last week against the Browns, they played numerous snaps, more than 15, with seven defensive backs. So you don't want to get caught up in that situation against the Chargers. So ideally, you would like to be able to line up with two tight ends, base personnel, and be able to run the ball to the point where you're in second and five or second and four. If you're constantly in second and eight or second and nine, that's the issue you face. And then you're overmatched a bit right now.
Phillip Rivers does a lot at the line.
An awful lot.
And Wisenhunt is giving him leeway there. Pre-snap reads are important. The Titans defense can't tip their hand. I know that's easier said than done, but are you noticing Rivers has more leeway at the line of scrimmage than ever before?
No, I think he's had it for years. I mean, we used to talk about it in our matchup room going back 4 or 5 years, particularly when we would have him wear a wireless mic, that he's Peyton Manning. He just doesn't get that kind of credit. He's always done that. He to me, is such a good player because he's not been to a Super Bowl and not had great playoff success. I think a lot of people don't think of him in those terms, but Phillip Rivers is an outstanding quarterback, and this offense presents a challenge in many different ways. Obviously, they run the ball efficiently, but their pass game presents a challenge just with the size of their receivers, number one, but they're also vertical-based. I mean, this is not a dink-and-dunk pass game. They attack at the intermediate and deeper levels.
Is that new? Because I remember a couple of years ago playing, and when the Titans played out there, it was a lot of quick passing from Phillip Rivers in that offense.
You know, I think I know for sure it's been the last couple of years. I can't remember when the Titans-Chargers game was. It wasn't last year, was it?
No, it was 2016.
Yeah. I mean, they've always been somewhat vertical based. Yeah, obviously, it all depends on game flow and the way they see a particular matchup. But in general, when you watch Chargers tape, you see an offense that definitely attacks at the intermediate and vertical levels. Now, having said that, they're very interesting with their personnel. We mentioned the three wide receivers who are so big and physical, but they have Austin Ekeler, who's a really intriguing player because he can detach from the formation, and there are times he lines up with Gordon. They're in the game together, and Ekeler is a very difficult matchup player.
I know down in distance and certain matchups will dictate how the flow of this game goes. So just from a broad sense here, I'm looking for ways the Titans probably feel like they can get after the Chargers defense. Do you like the potential matchup of Deion Lewis matched up against one of the linebackers for San Diego, or are they likely to use a safety in trying to cover him at times?
Well, now you get into if the Titans are in 11 personnel, meaning three wide receivers on the field, you could well see a safety matched up on Deion Lewis because they'll feel more comfortable with that. And I don't know if they'll play dollar, meaning seven defensive backs, as much as they did this past week, because obviously they got way ahead early, or reasonably ahead early. But if they, even with six DBs, there's a very, very good chance that a safety would be matched on Lewis when they go man coverage.
Let's stick with Lewis for a second. He was part of the pass protection problem. How much a part of pass protection problem and how much a concern you think the Titans have right now between Lewis and Henry and their ability to step up and stop somebody from
hitting
Mariota?
That's the problem. You just hit on a significant problem, not only with the inability to execute the way you would like, but when teams are very good blitzing teams like the Ravens, and they're better than the Chargers, but the Chargers do show some things, is it forces backs to have to stay in the backfield because you don't know where the pressure is coming from. It looks like it's coming from one side, then it comes from another side, and backs end up being part of protection. And then you can release backs into, you know, it's easy to say, hey, get Deion Lewis the ball in space in the pass game. Well, that's great, but if he can't protect your quarterback and you need him to pass protect, then you've got a whole different situation. So that's another reason multiple fronts work. You could show multiple fronts, guys, and rush four, but you force the back to initially stay in just by the nature of the front look. And that's what teams do. And good defenses do those kinds of things.
Don't miss Clay Travis with the Midday 180. Presented by the Home Loan Expert. Friday mornings at 11 on 104.5 The Zone.
Greg Cosell is with us. He's presented by the Huffaker Group of Keller Williams Realty. Visit them online, THGTN.com, or call 833-THG-NASH.
Greg, when the Titans brought in Darren Bates, they brought him in to be a special teamer, and they had no intention of playing him on defense. Rashawn Evans now played better in this game, it looked
He did.
But they still don't want him in every situation, and Darren Bates is playing on third down as a linebacker.
Yes, he is.
Seems to me pretty ineffectively. Tell me what you saw from him.
You mean that Bates is playing ineffectively?
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't studying him individually. You know, that when you play against the Ravens for the most part, and there's a few plays here and there, it's kind of death by a thousand paper cuts. I mean, I was watching that drive, that opening drive, and all of a sudden I said to myself, God, it seems like they've had the ball a long time, because I didn't see the game live. And I'm, you know, and then I looked up when they scored the touchdown. I said, God, that was 17 plays. You know, and so, you know, there's not a lot of big play. There weren't a lot of big plays this week, although there were some on the perimeter. I don't think Malcolm Butler has played particularly well, certainly in recent weeks. And obviously he's not playing in the base defense at this point in time. You know, but to put it on Bates, yeah, obviously he was not supposed to be out there. Woodyard's still, you know, inactive. So when it's next man up, they're not as good as the first man up.
Greg Cosell with us. Greg, let's go around the league a bit. Pittsburgh took down Cincinnati, and the Bengals didn't have their usual aggressive pass rush. Pittsburgh ran the ball well enough to force them to be honest and stay in base personnel, at least from the portions that I've saw. Had the Steelers not made some critical red zone mistakes, this game probably isn't as close as it was. Are we beginning to see the Steelers work some things out and figure out whatever issues they were battling earlier this season?
Are you talking about on offense or in general?
Well, I guess overall, but
because I think their defense, was a big problem early, and I think their offense sort of had to figure some things out, which most offenses do early in a season. There is a new coordinator now; he's been there before, but just the way the game is called becomes a little different. You know, I think they were probably uncertain as to what they had with James Conner, who's played extremely well, and his production is just the same as Le'Veon Bell's. We can debate Le'Veon Bell and how teams defend Le'Veon Bell. Maybe they don't defend James Conner the same way, but when all said and done, the production is very, very similar. And in fact, I think I noticed, and I found this stat really interesting, Jonathan. Le'Veon Bell last year had 3 rushes of 20 or more yards the entire season, 16 games. Mm. James Conner's already had 5. So, you know, again, it's not a matter of who's a better player, but it comes down to production. And Connor certainly impactful as a receiver as well. Another thing about that was Bell last year caught a ton of balls, but most of them were quick throws or screens. He wasn't catching balls down the field the way people think he does. And Connor's doing the same thing. So I think Connor has kind of filled that role, and they have a lot of talented pieces on their offense.
Miami beat Chicago, and maybe at first glance it's not a huge surprise, but when you consider that the Dolphins started Brock Osweiler for Ryan Tannehill, I wonder this. Adam Gase called a game that kept Osweiler from making a bad turnover or decision.
He made a few.
36 of his 44 passes were 10 yards or less.
Right.
But by doing that, the Dolphins held Chicago's big pass rush to 0 sacks and just 4 hits on the quarterback. So did the reduced game plan for Osweiler actually help in their overall game plan against the Bears' strengths?
Without question, but, you know, it was an odd game, Jonathan, because when you throw 6-yard passes and the defense can't tackle the guy, it makes everything seem like it's a great game plan. So, you know, we have to be a little careful about that. Now, on the other hand, they did really try to take care of Khalil Mack throughout the game with chips, with double teams. I mean, they made a conscious effort to take care of Khalil Mack, and I forget when he got hurt in the game, but he did get hurt. So, you know, when they're down, I think it's the fourth quarter, and he throws a 6-yard ball to Albert Wilson, and he runs through the entire defense for a 70-yard touchdown. You know, that doesn't make Brock Osweiler's performance a great performance, but that's what happens sometimes in these games.
Can you explain the impact Kirk Cousins is having on the Vikings offense, and are there examples of some throws he is making to Thielen and Diggs that couldn't have been made last year?
Well, that's a hard question to answer, but I think that one area in which I think Cousins has thrown the ball well, and it's an area that was always of concern when he was with the Redskins, is I think he's much better in the red zone. And I think you saw a good example of that this week when he hit Adam Thielen on a really well-designed concept. They got Thielen isolated on a linebacker, but we've seen him do that throughout the season. I can see in my mind's eye a touchdown he threw week one to Kyle Rudolph, another red zone throw, really a well-thrown ball, you know, where you're running out of room at the back of the end zone. But I thought this week in particular was a specific game plan for their opponent. The Cards are what we call a big nickel-based defense, meaning they play 3 safeties and not the extra linebacker. And so they ran the ball. You know, they had a smaller player on the field on defense, and they ran the ball really, really well. And they ran it a lot out of base personnel packages, meaning 2 tight ends on the field. So this was a really good game for Latavius Murray, but it was a specific game plan to beat the Cards, and it worked.
Greg Cosell with us. The Colts have plenty of injuries to point to. They don't have many playmakers on offense, but everyone is writing in Indy about how Andrew Luck is carrying this team on his shoulders. I know the win-loss record is what counts here, but it's a team with plenty of problems, Greg, but are you surprised by how competitive they are in these games?
That's a hard, you know, again, they've been competitive. Luck's the reason, because their defense isn't very good either. So you're going, see, here's what you have if you're a quarterback, and I think people need to understand this, Jonathan. You're Andrew Luck, so here's what you know going into a game. 1, I've got a makeshift O-line that's young and still a work in progress. 2, I have very limited weapons. And 3, I'm likely to have to score 30 points just to compete. That's the way he's going into every single game. So he's going to make mistakes. He's going to have to be aggressive. He can't be a safe quarterback. And I don't know if he's a safe quarterback by nature anyway, but he's going to have the games like he had against the Jets, where he makes some big-time throws, throws for a lot of yards, but then also makes some mistakes. And sometimes those mistakes could be killer mistakes, but he has no choice but to be aggressive. Otherwise, they're not going to score.
We circle back around to the Titans. Anthony Firkser made a couple catches.
Yeah.
See anything from him that suggests they're going to find more of an avenue to get tight ends involved here?
Well, I guess if they see him as a receiving tight end, that's very possible. I mean, the 18-yarder he caught was actually a very well-executed concept. He did a nice job with the route, but it was a really nice concept that set him up for that reception. But I remember him in the preseason. I thought he looked pretty good as a receiver. I mean, do they view him as more of a receiving tight end than a blocking tight end?
I think so.
Because that's what he looks like to me. You know, again, I can't sit here and tell you I'm overly familiar with him from his past, but he just looks more like a receiving tight end to me.
Greg Cosell, you can follow him on Twitter, at Greg Cosell. Greg, will you be waking up early to watch Titans and Chargers in London?
Is that a 9:30 Eastern time start?
Yes.
Well, I'll certainly be. I'll probably be in the office watching tape, but I'll put on the TV, and it'll be on. But yeah, I guess the 9:30 starts are starting this week, huh?
Yes. Well,
at least you're not.
Well, last week, you're right. It is this week because last week was a night game for them.
Right. So, do you guys get any free time when you go over, or are you working?
Yeah, we're working a bit. We're doing the show live. Midday 180 is live from London on Friday with 104.5 The Zone, and then we'll have all day Saturday to check out London.
Be like hanging with the Queen or anything when you're there?
Maybe Paul.
I'm anti Queen, so Paul, I'm banned from.
Paul
being
is the one.
The Queen.
Paul is the one who could get courtside at a Pacers game with you, not us.
Oh. Hey, you know, sometimes these things happen. What can you do?
That's right, Greg. Thank you, thanks. And always enjoy this segment with you each week.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Okay, check out NFL Matchup with Greg Cosell. It is DVR worthy, at least for me on the weekends. It airs way too early to catch live, but
even for you,
yeah, because it's. Technically, it airs really late. It's like 3:30 or 4:30 in the morning on ESPN2. I don't know why they put it in that time slot. But the ratings are very good for that show. And it's because it's DVR worthy.
People, Sal Pal loves that time because the expectations are so low.
Yeah.
For ratings.
That's right.
They don't really have to worry about ratings that time.